137, Book 7, Dangerous Elegance, in which a consumerism prompted by colonialism with claims of innovation and fashion, while in the interests of trade and labor motivation, is played with and subverted by its users in the colonized world.
138. The Indian does not even exercise care when he could conveniently do so. A European is likely to shake his head at the boundless indifference of these people who drag brand new objects, precious clothing, fresh provisions, and valuable items through thick mud or abandon them to swift destruction by children and dogs. A European's account of the Yagan Indians of Northwest Canada, cited by Marshall Shellens, the original affluent society.
139. The 17th century English merchant Sir George Peckham was optimistic. It is well known that savages that dwell in the south, as those who dwell in the north, so soon as they begin but a little to taste civility, will take marvelous delight in any garment, be it ever so simple as a shirt. This view was later theorized by Bernard de Mandeville in his Fable of the Bees, into the modernist notion that consumption is virtuous and the engine of progress. Man never exerts himself but when he is roused by his desires. While they lie dormant, and there is nothing to raise them, his excellence and abilities will be forever undiscovered. It is in the interest of all rich nations that the greatest part of the poor should almost never be idle and yet continually spend what they get. Bernard de Mandeville, An Inquiry into the Origins of Moral Virtue, 1714. And repeated in 1777, if we examine into the motives which rouse men to activity in civilized life and prompt them to persevere in fatiguing exertions of their ingenuity or strength, we shall find that they arise chiefly from acquired wants and appetites. These are numerous and importunate. They keep the mind in perpetual agitation, and in order to gratify them, invention must always be on the stretch, and industry must be incessantly employed. William Robertson, History of America, 1777.
140. Modernity is an endeavor. The discovery and appropriation of desire, Henri Lefebvre, 1961.
141. The British made this an article of faith in the exporting consumption goods, especially cloth. A country in which no cotton was grown became the world's biggest exporter of cotton cloth. By 1840, they were also exporting 10 yards of woolen cloth per inhabitant of Latin America per year. Businessmen were started to wear frock coats and top hats. No coincidence that best-selling book on etiquette in the Americas was to do with sweat. It confirmed what Karl Marx had noted. England's colonial market ware, besides, English tastes and habits prevail. Karl Marx, Capital, Volume 1, 1867.
142. 1860s British consul in the Peruvian city of Arequipa was confident that cloth sales would increase still further as civilization advances and the needs of the population increases. And the Peruvian elite, no longer protectionist, saw consumption as modern and claimed that a lack of needs prevented Indians from working harder and from appreciating the consumer goods the industrial age provided. Only by instilling needs could domestic markets expand. But Indian peasants did not construct a direct relation between consumption behavior and civilization, because they did not share the elite's notion of progress and modernity. Indians were not plagued with the fear of lagging culturally behind other areas of the world. They were focused on the practical value of manufactured goods. Maria V. Vicente, Fashion, Race, and Cotton Textiles, 2011.
143. The category of the antique emerged in the Romantic period. By antique is meant the modern notion of a commodity whose function or use value has changed radically or disappeared. Rather than the antiquity of ancient classical culture, the antique was a nationalistic and to some extent domestic concept. Antiques were special kinds of luxury commodity, and luxury was a feature of the development of commercial capitalism through the long 18th century. In other words, the antique is new in two ways. It is a new kind of commodity, and its special role is to embody and enhance the aura of the commodity fetish. Timothy Morton, The Poetics of Spice, 2002.
144. In the 2013 Peru edition of Vogue magazine, one of the shots features a model set up to look like Maria Rijker, who, with groundbreaking insight and astonishing perseverance, traced the now famous Nazca period lines in the Peruvian desert. This disrespect of her work follows its misuse and vulgarisation by Erich von Däniken, and involves not just the location shooting, but also the fetishistic use of her spectacles.
145. The cultural heritage zombie enjoys an artificial life. It is a life connected to the machine of present urges, a modern machine which, by means of diverse administrative, economic, and technical devices, extracts rich fluids from the heritage zombie in the form of political identity, legitimization, and potentially explorable merchandising, but to which, on the other hand, it must regularly inject vital liquids administered in a bureaucratic way in order to keep it alive. Gilles Manuel Hernandez, 2006.
146. At the Sheeparaman Arts, Crafts and Cultural Village in High Tech Hyderabad, you purchase the entry ticket at a kiosk. The ticket is barcoded and next to the kiosk is a turnstile. Presumably, you could swipe the ticket for entry. But instead, you hand it to a man who then turns a turnstile for you to enter. Why sell a barcoded ticket if you have to hand it over? Why have turnstiles that are not automatic? But this juxtaposition of the automated and the manual makes sense if seen in terms of ritualistic ascriptors of the modern. Inside one outlet is a branch of a successful hand-printed cloth co-op. Inside one outlet is a successful hand-printed cloth co-op. Inside is one outlet of a successful hand-printed cloth co-op. Paradoxically, the demand for the traditional is precisely due to the rise of the modern. But in a context where it's hard to know if the modern is particularly new and if the traditional is old. Nidhi Srinivas, Managerialism and NGO Advocacy, Handloom Weavers in India, 2008.
147. Tina Gornajik from London Central St Martin's Art School wants to use DNA extracted from the dead designer Alexander McQueen's hair to regenerate his skin in a laboratory. Using cutting-edge biotechnology, she hopes to grow enough skin to fashion an entire bag as a tribute to the designer who died in 2010.
148. Fashion is regarded as a phenomenon of European modernity that started in Paris in the mid-19th century and firmly established at the start of the 20th. Indeed, trends in modern art spilled into fashion. The flat-chested figure of the 1920s corresponded to cubism and modernism in the purification of forms and the rejection of the decorative. Gilles Lipovetsky, The Empire of Fashion, Dress and Modern Democracy. On Tahitian tattoos. It is strange that these people should value themselves upon what is no distinction, for I never saw a native of this island, either man or woman, in a state of maturity in which these marks were wanting. Possibly they may have their rise in superstition, especially as they produce no visible advantage and are not made without great pain. But though we inquired of many hundreds, we could never get any account of the matter. Captain, then Lieutenant, James Cook, in the Annual Register, 1774.
149. Modernity's claims for individualism don't add up, as in the world of fashion. With haute couture, innovations may have remained unpredictable, but they became obligatory, part of a regular process, while the fashion system that had been constituted in the name of the principle of individuality managed only to spread, imposing uniform, standardized norms, and constituted the modern phase of authoritarian, individualist societies. Gilles Lipovetsky, The Empire of Fashion, Dress and Modern Democracy, 1994. Men of the Dinka tribe of Sudan restrict their apparel to corsets elaborately beaded to convey status, affiliation, wealth, and, if photographs are any guide, their considerable beauty. Similarly, the women of Parisian haute couture wear beaded corsets from the atelier of John Galliano and Mr. Gaultier to convey status, affiliation, and all the rest. Metropolitan Museum of Art's Costumes Initiative.
150. Anne Bryden and Sandra Nielsen, Consuming Fashion, Adorning the Traditional Body, 1998. Clothing systems of the colonial other were considered to be non-fashion, or fashion in negative image, sign of the childlike mentality of the prototypical primitive. The category fashion was reserved for an industrial mass production and consumption system. Thus defined, fashion mirrored the familiar and insidious dichotomies of large versus small, literate versus non-literate, developed versus underdeveloped, and the people with history versus those without. These European claims are extraordinary when the 17th century trader Jean-Baptiste Tavernier, in his travels in India, noted that the city of Sironji, the workers print their calicoes according to design given by the foreign merchants, indicating a high level of connectedness to the international markets. The 18th century slave ship, the Diligent, carried fabrics to the slave coast to trade with, and there the problem was to pick just those styles and colours that were in demand along the Guinea coast that year.
151. The claim is most spectacularly given the lie by the slaves of Zanzibar, who, when freed at the end of the 19th century, became instead, a British official said, slaves of fashion. While new attractive kanga, printed cotton wrap designs, sold rapidly in the first weeks after their arrival in Zanzibar town, each went quickly out of fashion. It must not be supposed that a woman with any proper respect for herself or her family will be seen in these patterns in 3 months' time, warned one British official. Traders and manufacturers were therefore encouraged to produce small batches of particular designs in order to capitalise on women's preferences for limited edition prints. They were also warned of Zanzibari women's very particular tastes, and encouraged to send samples to the Isles first to determine if a particular colour or design combination would appeal to the island women before embarking on large-scale production. In 1900, a newly arrived smart kanga design would sell for 4 or 5 rupees in the first week of arrival, rapidly dropping to a low price of 1 rupee within 2 months. Laura Fair, Remaking Fashion in the Paris of the Indian Ocean, 2004.
152. The runaway slave Dick in Arundel County, USA in 1777, had a green cloth coat, a red plush cape with blue cuffs, and a deep blue cambly jacket with gold lace on the sleeves. One response from the whites was scorn, so that the actress Fanny Campbell, even though an abolitionist, could write how on Sundays, slaves dressed in the most ludicrous incongruities you can conceive, frills, flounces, ribbons, combs stuck in their woolly heads. Renewing and identifying themselves as SAPE in the 1970s, Congolese dandies were conscious of representing a visual on-the-street opposition to the corrupt then-President Mobutu's cynical monopoly claim on and use of African tradition as diversionary populism. Like the earlier houseboys, they were prepared to spend nearly all their income on their label clothes and shoes, Western labels like Gucci and Chanel, to promote their own dignity, but also to create a fun ambience on the streets. From the Hasidic Jews copying the dress of the Polish aristocracy to the Australian working class flash mob of the late 19th century, through the outrageous costumes of the marginalized Greek Rambettis, the 1940s Afro-American and Latino Zoot Suiters, to the Edwardians of the 1960s USSR and the mods of Northern Europe, there is an element of cheeky rebellion, playing games with what is modern, what is traditional, mimicking the rulers, and most of all, creating an elegance beyond their station.